Welcome to the BookTree podcast. What should your kids and teens be reading next? To answer that question, we'll be interviewing authors and illustrators, publishers and literacy experts, and other bookish people. We'll also look at current book news and trends and discuss issues around reading and writing. We'll look at the most burning question on all our minds. How do we get kids to read in these screen-obsessed times? Hosted by me, Corinne Rosmarin, journalist and writer.
Welcome to the BookTree podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the 10th episode of the BookTree podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. It is such a pleasure and a joy to have you here. I'm so grateful for everyone who sends me comments on the episodes and lets me know what they think, what they're looking for. Please do subscribe to the episodes and you'll get notified when our new episodes drop. And now let's get into this episode. We start with a little bit of a summary of how to look for books. I've had a lot of people asking me, what books do you recommend? And really, it's so dependent on what your child is interested in. But what I thought of doing is just giving you a summary of the tips that I use when I'm looking for books for children. And then we'll have a lovely young man called Cedric, who is giving us his review of Alan, King of the Universe, followed by an in-depth interview with Janola Govender. She's the children's sales rep from Penguin Random House, and she'll be giving us all the insider tips on the best books coming out from now until December 2025. When you consider that about 2.2 million new titles in children's books are published worldwide each year, you can imagine how hard it is to choose a good book. What do you do when you walk into a bookstore? Do you let your child have free rein and go pick up the book that they like? Do you get involved at all? Or perhaps you're buying a book for your child and they're not even with you. Or you're buying a book for a child who is a friend's child or a godchild. There's a couple of tips I'd like to share with you on what to look for. And it'll make it easier when you go into a bookstore and you have a whole lot of books in front of you. There are many, many tips. I'm going to just whittle them down to the top tips. Number one is to find a book that is well produced, well put together. Look for vivid and well-drawn illustrations, because you want quality books that have gone through a rigorous editing and production process. Avoid the obviously AI-generated or poorly published books. The quality of writing will usually match the quality of production. And I know self-publishers might take affront at this, but the truth is that paying attention to the overall appearance of a book is vital. The illustrations should support the storyline. Don't shy away from wordless books either. Those wordless books that are filled with vivid illustrations help your child to develop their language skills because they have to use deduction and visual clues as the story progresses. And you can read those books together with them and, you know, say aloud, oh, look, he's all alone. Where did the dog go? Why is he going to the park? Let them point out things to you too, so that it's a two-way street. And also let them just look at the books on their own. I remember loving looking at books that just had beautiful illustrations and not really understanding the story even, but just getting inspired by the visual story. Next, you want to look for exciting and interesting characters. These make the most memorable books. You don't want characters that seem like one-dimensional cardboard cutouts or stereotypes. Seek diversity in everything from their skin color to their backgrounds. Make sure that children see not only themselves represented in the book, but also the complexity of the world around them. Avoid heavy lesson or moral storybooks. Yes, we want to teach children, but kids can see right through them. And, you know, generally those books just become boring. It's better when the moral is wrapped up inside a well-told story and it doesn't hit you over the head with its message. When you're buying books for younger children, look for books that are fun to read aloud together. Strong rhyme, a good lyrical flow will make the story memorable and fun. When you read, use different voices and repeat the phrases after the story. So, for example, when my kids were little, we used to love Julia Donaldson's book, The Rhyming Rabbit. And one of the refrains was, you go, oh no, oh woe, oh sorrow. And this became a repeated phrase we used in our family whenever someone was leaving. And in this way, you build vocabulary and comprehension skills. The musicality of the rhymes and the rhythm makes learning engaging, and they will soon develop an ear for language. And this is vital in encouraging a lifelong love of words. Next is to look for books that suit your child's interest and their temperament. You know, go for funny stories for children who maybe don't love reading. Let them be entertained by characters like Dog Man and the Wimpy Diary, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Then also don't stick to the classics. A lot of people will say, oh, I'm trying to get my children to read all the books I loved. And I can tell you, coming from me, that my children very rarely loved the books that I loved, besides Roald Dahl. But a lot of the books that I thought they would adore, they just never took to. So do a little bit of research, find out about new books that are coming out. You'll see that children love to read about the characters from their favorite cartoons like Bluey or Percy Pig. And while you might not be fans of these books, just give them a read first and weed out the better ones. Also, spend some time chatting to librarians and bookshop assistants. They will know what's selling and what's trending. Also important to let your children choose, because they will gravitate to the books that they are naturally interested in. And they might have heard about a book from a friend and then they'll go looking for it. The only thing I would say in that case is to make sure that the book is age appropriate. I have a big problem, and I've mentioned this before, with the BookTok books. They are marketed as these fun sort of love stories and romances, but they're actually for a much older audience. They are for young adults, I would say from age 16 plus. So just when your child has chosen one of those books, make sure that it's not too old for them. The content is just above them. And then another big thing is that when you're looking for a book, make sure that it suits the age range and the reading level of your child. So in terms of complexity, while there's nothing wrong with exposing children to more complex language and plots, you can run the chance that they feel like reading is too hard and they just give up. So I always kept all the old picture books out on the shelves for years after they were past that stage, because that encourages them to, you know, rest in easier books when they want to. And don't say things like, that's too easy, that's not your age. Just let them read the easy book. And then say, let's try this one. Let's read this new one. And slowly but surely, you tackle harder books. If you're still not sure about whether a book is the right age for your child, especially when they are becoming young, independent readers, there's a thing called the five-finger rule for choosing books. This makes it so easy. When your child has the book in front of them, turn to the first page. As they start to read, tell them to hold up one finger for every word they don't know or they can't pronounce. The number of fingers they're holding up by the end of the page will tell them if the book is the right level. So if they're holding up no fingers or one finger, it's too easy for them. Anything from 2 to 3 fingers is just right. 4 to 5 fingers means the book is a little bit too hard for their stage of independent reading, and it's best read aloud with a buddy or yourself. So always aim for a book that is 2 to 3 fingers. If they hold up any more or less, it's a clue that they should try and find another book until they're a little bit stronger at reading it, or if the book is just too easy for them. So I hope those tips will help you. If you still need some book recommendations, the BookTree website is full of books that I have reviewed or I've had guest reviewers reviewing for us. They are honest. They give you the background to the author as well. And they are available on the website, www.thebooktree.co.za. These books have either been sent to me by publishers or they are books that I have found while raising my own children. And I do love it best when I get children to review the books. So if you have children who are interested in reading and you are able to do a little book review with them, you can even review it on a phone and you can send it in to me. Please get hold of me via the email on the website. On that note, I do have a wonderful book called Alan, King of the Universe, written by Tom McCachlin. And it's been reviewed for us by 10-year-old Cedric at Akasha School in Johannesburg. And we're going to cross over now to Tess Rayner, co-principal, who chats to him about the book.
It's time to dive into the pages of the book review.
Hi, I'm sitting with Cedric. He's 10 years old and he's just finished reading Alan, King of the Universe by Tom McLachlan, published by Hodder Children's Books. This two-color graphic novel is suitable for newly independent readers. And if you loved Dogman, then this is definitely a book that you should read. Hi, Cedric.
Hi.
So, Cedric, if you had to explain the story to a friend in one sentence, how would you tell it?
I would explain it by telling my friend it's about a cat trying to rule the world with many silly ideas.
I'm curious to know, were a lot of those things that he did really funny, and did you laugh out loud?
Yes, I did. The funniest part I enjoyed the most was when he tried to make numbers, but that didn't end very well.
Making numbers? That sounds ridiculous. Why did he try and make numbers?
So that he could rule the world and so that it could be easier to count.
Alan sounds like a very determined cat.
Are you more of a dog or a cat person, Cedric? And or are you one of those people who love both dogs and cats?
I think I'm one of those people who like both cats and dogs, because dogs are very protective and they follow you around and they make you laugh. Cats are very loving creatures, so as dogs, and they're very nice to snuggle with.
I hear you. I actually also like dogs and cats. Do you think that Alan was the kind of cat that you would want to snuggle with, though?
Not really, because he looks like a cat that wants to take over the world, and he's very evil.
An evil cat? Yeah, that's definitely not something I would want to snuggle with.
Was Alan King of the Universe an easy book to read? And if it was, what made it so easy?
Yes, I think it was an easy book because you don't have to read long words and you don't have to, and it has pictures so you can understand this book as well.
Graphic novels are fun for that reason. Cedric, what kind of books do you normally like to read?
At first I did not know, but when I saw this book, I really liked it, and I really like adventure books.
Me too. Adventure books are such fun. There's so much that happens so quickly, and you never know what's going to come next. Cedric, would you recommend this book to your friends?
Yes, I would recommend it because it's funny and easy to read and there are lots of pictures, so I think they would enjoy it.
Wow, thank you, Cedric and Tessa. You see how easy it is to do a book review? Guys, get hold of me and let me know if your kids are keen. You can record the book review on your phones and send it in to me. Okay, now it's time to hear from the experts. I'm going to be chatting to Shanola Govender. She is the children's sales representative for Penguin Random House based in Gauteng. Shanola began working in the book world just over 10 years ago. She started working as a part-time job at a bookstore in 2014 while she was studying, and she has never left the industry. In 2019, she moved into a full-time role at a big store where she looked after the children's section and did everything from buying the children's books for the store to making the space fun and inviting for young readers. She then joined Penguin Random House in 2021, and she loves her job and gets to work with amazing children's books every day. Shanola, it's so lovely to have you in our studio today. I am really excited to hear about the books that you are excited about. I always look at Penguin Random House's lineup and see so many exciting books.
Hi, Corinne. It's so lovely to be here, and I am really excited to talk to you about our new books coming in. So I will be covering books from July to December.
Obviously, you've divided those books up into different age groups. And I know that we shouldn't always stick to age groups because some children are more advanced. But if you can tell me briefly, maybe it's like a book or two per age group. What are you really most excited about? Let's start off with your toddlers.
For toddlers, it's actually a personal pick. It's a Papa Peekaboo board book for Taylor Swift, because I just think she's so relevant right now. It's so different. So this will be coming in December, and it's just a great way to introduce little ones to who Taylor Swift is. And you get 5 pop-ups throughout, and it's just really exciting considering all of the excitement around Taylor Swift this year.
That is actually so funny that Taylor Swift is having a toddler board book coming out about her. And when you say it's about her, I mean, is it her values, her philosophies, or her songs?
It's introducing us to who Taylor Swift is. So the first part of it is her in a recording studio, and then it's sort of how her career's moved, so the different songs she's done. You get to meet her cat, Meredith Grey, and then it ends with her on tour at a concert. So it's sort of just like short snippets into her life.
Okay, great. And what age group are you thinking this is aimed at?
So because it's a board book, it's probably 0 to 3. But I do think this is something that any child could enjoy and love. I mean, there's writing on the page, so you can read it by yourself as well. But primarily, it would be that 0 to 3 age group.
This says so much about our culture at the moment. I'm just actually, my mind is reeling. I don't know what to say. The thought that there's a toddler book from age 0 to 3 about Taylor Swift. I am a fan of hers. I love that quote that you've got in your pamphlet, books train your imagination to think big. But I do wonder how a parent is going to broach this with their little toddler saying, you know, I suppose introducing them to the songs and then this is the backstory to Taylor Swift. Well, moving swiftly along, pardon the pun, what's your next book?
The next one is a picture flat called How Many Ways Can You Say Thank You? This is done by local author Rufilwe Moakhloli. And I love it. It teaches you how to say thank you and express gratitude in the 12 official South African languages. So it includes sign language. And it also links to an audiobook that's narrated by the author, but she teaches you how to pronounce the words as well. And I just think it's so fun for kids to learn, but also parents to do with their kids, because I think a lot of us don't know necessarily how to say thank you in all of the languages. So it's a fun way to learn about the South African culture.
That is lovely. And I do like Rufilwe's book, How Many Ways to Say Hello. All her ranges of books are so special. So when does that come out?
This one is coming out in September. And this is more, because it's a picture flat, I would say it's more from ages 4. And this can actually go up until 8 or 9. It's that kind of picture flat that covers quite a big age group.
There's a huge need for these kind of books that really do cover all the different languages, and our introductory books, just opening up the conversation with children in different languages. I love that. I'm excited for that one. What's next?
The next one is one of our biggest books of the year. It is Lottie Brooks.
Oh, I love Lottie.
Love her. She is, I mean, I think she's just so relatable as a character. So this is tween, so you're looking 9 to 12. And everything that she goes through throughout the entire series is so relatable. It's things that we all went through at that age. And the new one is Lottie Brooks versus the Ultra Mean Girls, which came out in July, and it's currently selling really well. And this is teaching kids how to deal with mean girls. I mean, she's going through losing her friend, and she's trying to win her back, but how does she do this? And she has really embarrassing moments, which I think makes her more relatable. She's not this perfect tween. It's so much fun. And we also have the author coming to South Africa in September, which I think is really going to help boost sales. It just creates a bit more excitement. She's going to school. She's doing some mall events as well. Yeah, I think Lottie is just going to keep selling loads and loads. She's coming out with a new book almost every year, I think.
I do love the character of Lottie Brooks. And I just think that it is a very relatable series. It's also written in a way that is genuinely funny. I find myself kind of going back into that age, which is a long time ago. And there's laugh out loud moments. So I really enjoy that. And that's the author, Katie Kirby. Is that right?
Yes, Katie Kirby.
So she'll be out and about at schools in September.
Her first few events will be from the 15th of September. She'll be in Johannesburg, as well as on the 16th. And then she'll be going down to Cape Town for the 17th and 18th of September.
Okay, wonderful. I'll add in the details on my webpage. What's next?
We can't not mention Jeff Kinney, Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yes. So
this is now the 20th book in the Wimpy Kid series. And it's called Party Pooper, which I think will just tickle every little child. It's so funny. And basically, Greg is throwing himself his own birthday party. And like the rest of the Wimpy Kid series, something is bound to go wrong, but it's hilarious. And this is coming out on the 21st of October. And I think it's just, as all of the other books, I mean, it sells itself. Jeff Kinney has a way of just writing that really pulls people in. I've had some bookstores tell me that they've had customers that are slightly older, so like in their late teens, that are still coming in and buying it purely for the nostalgia. So that is more 9 to 12 as well.
And I do feel that part of the power of the Diary of Wimpy Kid series is the format. It is so easy for children who don't love reading to get into, and just with that sort of almost like a graphic cartoon feel about it. It's a great book just to get kids hooked. And especially because it's a series, like you say, 20 books. I mean, that's insane.
It's so insane.
One of the things I noticed on your catalog is you've got new books coming out, you know, Spot books by author Eric Hill, The Hungry Caterpillar books by author Eric Carl. And this always makes you wonder, because obviously these authors have passed away a while ago. How do you retain the magic? Who creates these new books with the same characters, the same sense of humor and magical writing?
Publishers will generally collaborate with other writers, illustrators, as well as the author's estate, just to ensure that it's staying as original as possible. So I think there's a lot of different people behind the scenes that are keeping the magic going behind the books. And the thing is, from what I realize with these books as well, is no matter how many books have come out recently, you wouldn't actually know that the author's passed away because it's still got that feel of the original stories. At the end of the day, the author's estate will have the final say in the books and the work. And I think that keeps that magic going.
Yeah, because I do feel like in some ways, it's a bit like profiting from a cash cow. You know that those authors are always going to have a huge readership following them. So the fact that the authors are no longer creating the works themselves is a bit problematic in some ways for me personally, as a writer myself, because I do feel like there should be a point where you say, well, that original work from that author is no longer available. But at the same time, I do hear what you're saying, that the author's estate is controlling the quality. So, you know, they are such beloved characters and children love to get new books about those characters.
I think that's the thing as well. Like when you use characters that kids love and you try and teach them, like, you know, first concepts and just important topics like that, it makes it easier for kids to actually consume that because it's something that they can relate to.
I just hope that it does give space for new authors that are going to create another beloved character like Spot and the Hungry Caterpillar. Moving on to another book that I'm really excited about. I love the look of Tell Your Own Fairy Tale because I passionately believe in fairy tales, and there's many studies that show how powerful they are in early literacy. Tell me a bit more about this book. What is the concept?
So this is a picture flat. So you're looking at ages 3 to 5, possibly slightly older. But the idea of this is, can you create the best fairy tale ever? You have over 60 different story options because on each page of this book, you're picking different characters, different actions, different settings, and you're just coming up with a completely different story each time. And I think it just helps kids create something magical, something funny. And by giving kids the choice as well, it's great for them because it's not having to just read something from front to end and that's the end of it. Now you could actually come up with so many stories. You can use this book over and over again.
That's brilliant for bedtime stories as well. For parents who are tired of the same story with the same ending, you can choose a different one. What ending are we having tonight?
Exactly. And I loved this as well when I first saw it because I love fairy tales too. Mm. And it's just, they sometimes refer to the classic fairy tales, but then at times you'll find like a different character you haven't seen before. And that's just so exciting about it as well.
I'm really excited to see this one. That's definitely going to be on my wish list. And then there's another book that I laughed out loud when I saw the concept and the heading, which is Simon Gets Sneezed. Literally written from the point of view of a booger, a piece of snot. Tell me a little bit about this book.
I mean, we know kids love things that are gross. And this is just basically our little Simon. He lives in the left nostril of a little girl called Phoebe. And he lives there with his family. And it's really funny because he has a sister that's constantly picking on him, for lack of a better word.
Totally.
And he doesn't feel like a hero. And his dad decides to take him on a slimy adventure to show him everything snot does to protect our bodies. And I think there's also such an important lesson in this because sometimes you might not feel like what you're doing is important, but you're teaching kids that no matter what you're doing, you are important. What you do matters. It's an interesting way to send that point across. But yeah, it's really fun.
I love it. I also want to see that one. That's on my wish list as well. I just think I can imagine the pitch letter. You know, I've written a story about a part of your body you might not realize how much you need. Snot. It's wonderful. And I do think that children will love it because they are curious about those kinds of things. And because, you know, you always see children with their fingers up their nose. They have no idea about manners at that very young age. So this is teaching them a little bit more about their own body, their hygiene, why they have this thing up their nose. I think it'll be a great hit. And then onto a book that I saw in your catalogue, which really intrigued me. I think it's a really important book. It's called This, That, Who, A Celebration of a Brain That Works Differently. It's written by Katie Ashworth. From what I understand of it, it's a picture book and it's celebrating the diverse ways we think and process life. Can you tell me more?
Right on the cover of the book, it has a little sentence saying Kiki's brain is messy and fizzy and sometimes too busy. And I think a lot of kids feel that way and they don't know how to put that into a sentence. But The idea of this book, like you said, is to celebrate the different ways that we think. And the author, she's actually training now to be a play therapist. So she's bringing some of that into the book as well and helping kids redirect some of their creativity and their energy. Because at the end of the day, this little girl, Kiki, she does sometimes want to quieten her mind. When she goes to sleep, a lot's happening. When she's at school, a lot's happening. And so we're not telling kids to change and to be any different. We're rather just helping them in situations that they might find a little bit difficult. And I'm so glad that there are books like this that are moving more towards mental health for kids. And they're doing it in such a fun way that, you know, you don't want someone to feel like there's something wrong with them, because there isn't. And the books just help you celebrate what makes you unique at the end of the day.
And I think also what the book will do is help children understand those kids in their class who are, you know, louder or unpredictable, who speak out at inopportune moments, to understand that their brains work differently and they're not trying to annoy you or get into your space. We're all different, right?
Exactly. And there's something just so beautiful about that. I think this generation of kids is very lucky to have books that are like this coming out, because I know when I was a kid, we didn't really have anything like this. And if we did, it was so hidden. Mm-hmm. But now we're being so open about it. And it's really nice and helpful.
I think it's very important.
There's a lot of publicity going on around the Miss Rachel set of books. And I actually didn't really know anything about these books. I did a bit of research. So for people who have not heard of the Miss Rachel phenomena, Miss Rachel is a American, I think she's a speech therapist, she's a writer, and she noticed when her son was born, that he wasn't really speaking a lot. I think he was nearly 2 years old and he was obviously a little bit delayed. And she felt there was a need to have videos that showed pronounced words and introduced vocabulary and spoke through books and stories. So that's what I understand as a background story. Can you tell us more?
So Miss Rachel, shame, she's either a dream or a nightmare for parents because of her energy, but that's what kids love about her. She brings such a different energy to how she's teaching. She uses song, dance, and play to help little ones learn how to talk, how to express themselves, how to, you know, say what they're feeling. And the whole idea of her content is to be engaging, it's to be educational, and it's just to help with early childhood development. Because like you said, her son was struggling a little bit initially. And the books that are coming out now are to support the show in a way. So we have 4 books available. We've got 2 board books. The first one is First 100 Words. And what I love about it is it's words that kids are actually going to use. It's not just your colors and your fruits. It's got like real life objects. Like if you're going to the shop, what are you seeing in the shop? If you're at home, what are you seeing at home? And we've also got a Potty Time with Bean board book, which just makes potty training a little bit more fun for kids, because we know that that can be a very interesting experience. There's also a picture flat, Miss Rachel and the Special Surprise. But I think my personal favorite from the range is actually the Miss Rachel First Coloring Book, because it's more than just a coloring book. It's teaching kids their alphabet. And for each letter of the alphabet, there's something to color in. So for example, you'll get the letter B, you color in the letter B, and then you'll have ball and a picture of a ball. It's a fun way to reinforce that letter with that word and help kids develop their sense of speech at the end of the day. Mm. It's also great quality, but like I said, more than just an activity book, it's a learning experience. And I think that's what Miss Rachel is. She's a learning experience for kids.
That sounds interesting. So you don't feel like the parents need to play the YouTube pieces at the same time as the book? The books are standalone?
The books are standalone. And I mean, you can always watch the show and then do the book. But the idea of the books, I guess, would be if you don't have access to the show, you've got the book. You know, given sometimes how we have load shedding and stuff, it's nice to have an option that isn't on the screen for Miss Rachel.
I will put a link to some of the Miss Rachel YouTube videos just for parents who have never heard of her or seen any of her videos. What age are we talking about here for the Miss Rachel?
Because it's board books, so your toddlers from anywhere from 0 basically up until, I would say, 6, because you're helping to also develop their sense of vocabulary It's also great for kids who, you know, might have learning impairments as well, because she's using speech that really is something you can hold on to. And it's easy for kids to then repeat. It's very repetitive, very rhyming.
Yeah. Perhaps also for children, if their first language is not English, this is a good way of learning those words. Okay, well, that sounds like a good book to look at. Moving on to a theme that's really close to my heart, I noticed a lot of graphic novels. And there's obviously a worldwide move to include more graphic novels. So the ones that I noticed were The Magic Treehouse, there's a Dr. Seuss, there's a book called Unfairies, and Stitchhead. I'd love you just to tell me a little bit about these books and really what is the thinking behind this growth in graphic novels?
Just to start with some background on the books, The Magic Treehouse was a series that was, it's quite old, and they were originally just readers, and recently they've started to adapt these into graphic novels. And I think the idea behind this especially is just to help with early reading. And also, I mean, some kids are just visual readers in a sense, like you want to be able to see what you're reading. And so that's what The Magic Treehouse does. Dr. Seuss is a little spin on the classic, which I know sometimes not everyone loves that. They want to keep the originals original. But I think what makes Dr. Seuss so fun is it's not rewriting any story. It's just, it's a new story and it's done in a different way. And so the new one that we have coming out this year, which I think is coming out in September, is The Cat in the Hat, Thing One and Thing Two Take Over Homework. Yeah. And this is, I mean, it's relatable. We all know homework was a fun time. Thing One and Thing Two are helping Sally and Conrad to do their homework. And I mean, if you also watch Cat in the Hat, if you've seen the movies, it's also a great way to now get them into reading because they'll recognize the characters. Mm. And Fairies, that honestly, I think is one of the most fun graphic novels I've seen in a long time, because it's a group of fairies that they don't necessarily act like fairies. So you know how sometimes when you're ladylike and you're unladylike, so you have fairies and they're unfairies.
It's a very clever name. When I saw Unfairies, I thought that's actually a really catchy title. And the Unfairies, is that what age group would that be aimed at?
We have it as 6 to 9, but it does have quite a large page extent. So you could also do this for slightly older if you're looking at 9 to 12 and they don't enjoy reading. Mm-hmm. I think Unfairies would be a fun one to pick up for them as well. And it's also the kind of graphic novel that's great for boys and girls. It's not just, it doesn't seem too girly. It doesn't seem too boyish. It's just great to get any child into reading.
And who's the author of Unfairies?
That one is Aaron Hugh. So H-U-W.
Okay, great. And then Stitchhead?
Stitchhead. So this is actually exciting for us because there is a movie coming out. And whenever there's a movie, the books always do well. And so Stitchhead is a little monster that was created by Professor Erasmus when he was a child. And because he had success with Stitchhead, he decided he wanted to create more monsters. And so Stitchhead is almost just that person that's always there, and he's helping the monsters just get used to life and trying to make them not as scary as Professor Erasmus wants them to be. It is funny. It is sweet. If you've seen a picture of Stitchhead, he's also just adorable. You kind of want to have a little teddy of him with you as well. It's great fun. We have the graphic novels for slightly older, so we've actually recommended that for 9 to 12. And I think that is largely due to the page extent. And for this, we do also have chapter books for slightly younger. But for the sake of graphic novels, I would say more 9 to 12.
Okay, so there's chapter books and there's the graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when is the movie Stitchhead coming out in South Africa?
The movie is coming out at the end of October. So I think it's due for the 24th of October. And we're trying to make sure that all stores are stocked with the Stitcher titles. Yeah.
That sounds like a possible hit with young kids, especially because you've got two different types of books can appeal to different needs in children.
Exactly.
And would you say that, obviously, the thing with a graphic novel, like you say, it helps children who perhaps process things more visually. This growing rise of graphic novels, it's also probably speaking to the fact that children are really turning away from books. They are on their screens a lot more. So this is almost like trying to meet them halfway by entertaining them more.
I think that's what it is. With social media, it's so easy to just get lost in it, but it's because you're consuming a lot of visual things. So if you give a child a graphic novel that's full of color, it's vibrant, it's you're still reading, but you're seeing what you're reading. I think it's just a great way to help them just move away from the screens for a little bit. But even then, I think even kids who are reluctant readers, it's just a great way as well, because part of the daunting aspect of reading is it's a lot of words and you do have to use your imagination a lot of the time. And I think sometimes kids might feel like that's just a bit too much. You just want to sit and consume something. Mm-hmm. And graphic novels would be a great way to do that as well. I think they're also just great for early readers because you're associating your text with an image and it just helps to reinforce what you're reading.
And actually, I would say to parents who are worried that a graphic novel is not as good as a book, all the children do visual literacy at school. They all have to have, I remember this from my kids at school, you have to analyze comic strips. You have to look at little, all the cues of visual communication. So when eyes are raised, what does that mean? When there's an exclamation mark. And so reading graphic novels really makes you aware of that. So it's got a real value. I think all children should definitely be exposed to graphic novels as well as books.
I remember I, as a child, would read those comic strips in the newspaper as well. And it's just, it's a quick way to read something and it's fun and different. So I think it's definitely a great way to get parents more on board with graphic novels as well.
Absolutely. And then moving on to another theme that is just hasn't stopped, which is the theme of magic and fantasy. So you've got new books coming out. The ones that I noted were Mythmakers, Arcspire, Adia Kalbara and the High Queen's Curse. So I was wondering, what are you seeing in this genre? How have we moved on from the Harry Potter series, for example?
This genre is definitely becoming more relatable. I mean, I know magic isn't relatable, but they're starting to tackle a lot more social issues in these books. So for example, in Adia Kalbara and even Mythmakers and Arcspire, they're actually tackling issues of like colonialism, mental health, identity. And I think it's becoming such an important aspect. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, the fact that we're starting to see more mental health in children's books, it's something that I think is great for kids because you're reading a genre that you enjoy. You're reading a genre that you can get lost in, but in a way you're still relating to the characters because you might be going through the same thing, or you might know somebody that's going through the same thing. You might be learning about it in school. And it's just a fun way to just expand your knowledge a little bit more. And it's definitely different from Harry Potter in that sense. There's also a difference in world building. It's taking you on a much bigger adventure. You're going all over a specific city or a country. And a lot of the time now, these children's books are being set in countries that are real. It might be like a made up city, but the country will be very real, like England or Norway. Adia Kalbara sits in Africa. It's helping kids just relate to the content a little bit more.
And it does seem to be more representative of the diversity of the world.
Exactly. And also I'm loving that we're seeing a lot more people of color in important roles. I mean, for me, being Indian and growing up, I never had that where I could see myself in a book. Mm. And books are starting to do that. So not only with race, but also some people, there might be a character in a wheelchair. There might be a character who has anxiety. There might be a character who has ADHD. It's so much more inclusive now, which I think is great.
Absolutely important. And of those books, can you tell me a little bit about them? Because obviously there's going to be parents very excited at the thought of new books in this genre. A lot of children love this genre. So what can you tell me about Mythmakers? What age group are we looking at and what's it about?
Mythmakers is more 9 to 12. And this is about a group of kids that are setting off on a quest to uncover a bunch of ancient myths and legends that are going to help to save their home. And so in a large way, it's also drawing on mythologies. It's fun. It's an adventure. You're exploring. And I think just a great way to get kids into reading for 9 to 12. In fact, most of these books that you mentioned are 9 to 12. Okay. So Arcspire as well. 9 to 12. This is...
Who's Arcspire written by?
Jamie Littler. And he is based in the UK, but he's done a lot. He's also done Frost Hearts for the same age group. And Arcspire is, again, a very similar concept to Mythmakers. So it's five kids that are going on an adventure. They're all heroes in their own way. They all have different personalities. They're very different from each other, but they're working together to try and save their realm. They're searching in this book for ancient relics that are going to help save their home. Again, it's friendship. It's how people are going to work together to save a greater world. And it's a world that not only affects them, but affects everyone around them as well. Similar to Adia Kolbara, also great for 9 to 12. And like I mentioned before, this one is set in Africa, and the author's actually drawn on a few African mythologies throughout the book just to write her story and make it a little bit more relatable. Adia is a little girl. She's been cursed by essentially having too much power, but her aunt and uncle made her believe that it was a curse and she needed to change. And she ends up running away from home and she joins a school. And the school makes her realize that she's actually very powerful. And this power, again, can be used to save their world from greater forces. So I feel like the underlying theme with these books is saving home.
Yes.
And it's exciting. I think what's more exciting than saving the whole world and doing it either by yourself or with the help of other people. But of the three, I just loved Adia Kolbara. I feel like she was just such a powerful little girl, and she's really been dealt a very unlucky hand in life, but she's not using that. She's not letting it get her down. She's using that to make herself stronger, which I guess is also where that mental health aspect is coming in some of these fantasy series as well.
And is this the first in the series, the Adia Kolbara?
This is actually the second in the series. So the first came out last year. Yeah, book two is the one that's coming in now in 2025.
Very exciting. Series always get children excited. And then continuing with this whole myth theme now, I was very intrigued to see that you've got a new book called Court of the Dead by the best-selling Rick Rawdon and Mark O'Shea. So it's a new series called the Nico D'Angelo series. The first book was called Sun and the Star. And I see that this is now the second book, Court of the Dead. Is this a spin-off of the Percy Jackson series? Is this something that, if you know, I often get parents saying, my kids have loved Percy Jackson. What can they read now? Is it the same age group? Tell us more.
So this is the same age group. It's essentially a spin-off for most of his series. So Nico and Will feature in Percy Jackson, Heroes of Olympus, and Trials of Apollo. And the events of this series take place after those three series.
Okay.
It's honestly just a great way. If they've loved Percy Jackson, I would highly recommend this book, because a lot of the characters you actually see in the Percy Jackson series. And so kids will recognize names and places as well, because they return to a lot of the same places. With this new book, it's following on immediately from the events of book one, Sun and the Star. And essentially, now they're trying to help the monsters, because in book one, and I promise this isn't a spoiler.
Yeah, one, don't say it.
They helped to convince monsters not to be evil. And now this convincing is catching up with them in book two, because a lot of the monsters listen to them and are seeking refuge at Camp Jupiter, which is where Nico's sister works. But the problem is, one by one, these monsters are going missing, and they need Nico and Will's help to try and figure out what's happening. It turns out that there is a greater force. We don't know who, but there's a greater force that is going after these monsters because they want them to pay for whatever mistakes they've done in the past. It's full of adventure. It's full of mythology. It's going to keep you on your toes. This is the kind of book that you cannot put down. I mean, when I read book one, I was just like, give me more. So it's fun. And I mean, as much as it's 9 to 12, this is also the kind of author where if you grew up with Percy Jackson, if you grew up with Heroes of Olympus, you'll pick this up anyway. So it does have a large audience reach, but to start off, I would say from ages 9 and up.
Okay, great. This is definitely a big book. And when does the Court of the Dead come out?
This is coming out in October.
Okay, wonderful. There's so many wonderful books we've spoken about. I'm actually very excited. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us. This is really, it's wonderful to get the inside view of all the books coming out. And I think often for parents, you walk into the bookstore, there are so many books, and you do end up judging a book by its cover. But to have a bit of background and to know what to look for really helps.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's actually been so fun talking about these books, and I might be biased when I say this, but I feel like our covers do help. They're all really exciting covers.
They are gorgeous.
But yeah, I hope that this helps parents find something for their little ones.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And we'll definitely have you back in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that's a wrap for episode 10 of the Book Tree podcast. I have loved this session. I always love hearing about new books. And having seen a few of these books in my hands, I really am excited for them. I think that you should make notes of the ones that you think your children would be interested in and go and check them out. A big thank you to our guests, Janola Govender, to Tess Rayner from Akasha School, and Cedric. And just a call to action to everybody who's listening to this, please. If you enjoyed it, share it with your friends, your colleagues. Subscribe, it costs you nothing. Leave a review and let me know what else you'd like to be covered and what you'd like to hear about next. As always, keep reading and keep sharing stories with your children. You can see details of all the books that she mentioned on the website, and also that Tom McLachlan book, Alan, King of the Universe, the review's also up on the website as well. Please do keep in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Please subscribe. It's honestly, it means the world to us. The more I can build subscriptions, the easier it will be towards getting to have sponsors for this podcast. So listen out for the next one, episode 11, which will be coming out at the end of October. Until then, happy reading. Keep in touch.